now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
I'm Steffi Barnett.
Why have I got nothing coming from you?
Hello, hello. Hello. I'm there.
Oh, there you
I'm
are.
Really here.
And you're Steffi Barnett.
See, the seance did work.
On today's show, Red Sonja.
I talked to director MJ Bassett because Red Sonja is back and she's badder than ever.
And David Bowie.
We wish. Martin Spilacy talks to Robin Pritchard on his unique take of David Bowie.
All that and more today on Shout Out. Oh, there's no one young here. No one did it.
No one young, you mean?
I'm the youngest. It makes a change.
And what are you? You're above 40. Wow.
Yeah, 47.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not long now. Well, I've given Ezra a contract notice.
I saw that on Facebook. So happy birthday, Ez, for the weekend. Yeah. The one just gone, that is. It was a lovely party, bless. She was very touched by the looks of things when we were there.
Yeah. What a nice party.
What a lush cake.
Mm. It was nice,
who knew
it?
That Costco cake could be that good?
It was really nice.
Yeah, the sandwiches
really
were gorgeous too. They were Costco, weren't they?
Yeah.
So, it goes to prove, you know, if you want a decent party, Costco's the place to go. It's
obviously for cake.
Yeah, well, did bring back memories of a certain award show.
It did, because we had the same cake.
Exactly the same cake for the award. Only we had three of them.
two big ones and one small one. Yeah. They are huge.
They were huge, yeah. And I think we used like about a third of the little cake. And no one had any of the big cake, because when the awards finished, they were all, you know, they'd all been drinking and they all just disappeared. We were like, have some cake. Like, no.
Aww.
So. But it won't be, it will be a birthday, but it won't be a 15th birthday.
Obviously, LGBTQ awards. People don't have a sweet tooth. Unlike me.
Unlike you. So, yeah, I bet the cake's gone.
Of course. So Ez took a load into work.
I think your hummus is in our fridge. In fact, I think half your hummus is in our fridge. I think Carl's been at it.
We have another container, don't worry. And we got 500,000 tortillas.
They were big. I've never seen a bag of
tortillas. Well, it's an American size bag. So it's like a 100 weight sack.
It was big. It wasn't. If you like tortillas and hummus, you would have been in heaven.
Yeah.
It was lovely.
Anyway, yeah, it's still party season. There's still a little bit left. So, not that it ever really stops, does it? I mean, you can have a birthday any time of year. Carl's got a big one in November.
Yeah, well, if you're Catholic, you get two.
Do you?
Yeah, you get your Saints Day. And your own birthday.
Oh.
And all queens have an official birthday as well.
So you have two, do you?
Damn right. Like all queens.
I mean, it is a bit of an LGBT thing to, like, you know, on a special one, you have like a whole weekend or a whole week.
Do you think so? Oh, I know a lot of people, regardless of their sexuality, that do really go overboard for their birthday and take a week off work or whatever. So,
Carl's always hated the fact that his is in November when it's cold. He was like, I'm going to move my birthday. I'm like, it doesn't quite work like that, darling. You can't just move it. He's like, why can't I?
You could.
We rebirth.
Is there a thing called rebirthing therapy?
There is a rebirthing therapy, isn't there?
Oh, don't go
or,
down
or
that
birth
road,
trauma Harry. Therapy? I don't know.
Oh, what? Where you go through the birth again as an adult?
I think so. I'm not sure.
I'm beginning to urge now, Terry.
Terry, I think that was on one of those sites that you're not allowed to talk about on the radio.
Only visit for research purposes only.
Yeah, moving swiftly on.
Oh, dear.
So, Red Sonja.
Great film.
Yes, my boys were absolutely in love with Conan the Barbarian on Betamax.
Betamax. There'll be so many people listening that, I mean, even if you said VHS, they'd go, what?
Yeah, you're right.
In those days when you watched the telly off a cassette tape, you know, big one in a player.
Well, video recorder.
I had the first Sony, I think it was called an 880B. It was mechanical, so it was mechanical push-button, so
it clunked,
no electronics.
Our first one had a pop-up on the top and put it in and pushed it down.
Yeah,
and
Yeah, then yeah. I had an 8000, I think, which was a front electronic version.
It must have been quite old because it didn't have an infrared remote. If you bought the remote control, which my dad wouldn't pay for, it was on a cable and it ran across the lounge and you plugged it into the bottom of the VHS player. Yeah.
And a reminder, you're listening to Aged FM, the radio station for very old people their technology.
I can remember getting up to change channels on a telly.
So can I. A dial to change channels.
Click,
yeah.
Click, click.
Well, yeah. There's always been at least four channels that I can remember, but I'm sure you
remember. I remember just, I watched the opening night of Channel 4. It was very exciting when Channel 4 started.
It was, yeah.
That, you know, it was, nowadays, new channels are to a penny, but in those days.
It was anarchic. How did they get away with that first week?
It was such a radical channel.
I remember, I remember Channel 5 starting.
That's right, with the Spice Girls.
Yeah, it was as tacky when it started as it carried on.
It's Canadian.
It's more of a commercial channel. It didn't have the remit that Channel 4 had in its constitution, shall we say.
Anyway, shall we find out a bit more about Red Sonja?
Yes, please.
Okay, dear listener, if I mention 1973, Marvel Comics, if I mention Conan the Barbarian, and that my two boys are absolute fanatics of Conan the Barbarian, and they used to watch it endlessly on Betamax, if you can remember that. We did have Betamax, we didn't have VHS. I'm joined by the director of the new film, Red Sonja, MJ Bassett. Welcome to Shoutout, MJ.
Thank you for having me, Steph. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, great. And I'm loving the poster behind you.
That's my green screen backdrop. It might just fall down at any second, but let's hope the technology stays.
Let's hope not. Well, we're not using the video, so it doesn't really matter. Right, MJ, first, let's go back to your childhood. Were you always walking around with a camera in your hand? Did you always envisage that one day you'd be directing your own film?
No, I envisaged myself being a wildlife vet in Africa. That was my great passion. Science and nature is really what I care about most in the world. And I didn't really even consider being a film. Well, I'll tell you what it was. I can actually distill it down to one moment. It was my older brother and his friends are the ones who had the cameras. They had those old high eight film cameras. Super eight, sorry. High eight was video. Super eight, right? That little format that everyone did their home movies on back in the day. And I remember following them around because they were obsessed with Star Wars and doing those things. And I was just like a little kid just following everybody around. And I remember them gathering, this I probably shouldn't tell this, but they would get there after fireworks night. They would go and find unexploded or unfinished fireworks and scrape out all the gunpowder that was left over. So they'd end up with this tiny little pile of gunpowder. And then they would put it inside. I remember the one I remember most clearly was an Eagle transporter from Space 1999. Right? And then they would set fire to it on camera and it would explode. And I was there and I was so amazed by this. And then they would take the film afterwards and they would scratch like laser blasts in frame by frame by frame. And this was a guy called Stuart Wright. So Stuart Wright, God bless you, because you gave me, I think, the original seeds of that love. And then doing stop frame animation and things like that. I remember doing little stop frame animations on the cameras, trying to make monster movie, because I was obsessed with Ray Harryhausen and those Sinbad, Jason and the Argonauts, Valley of the Guanji kind of things. That's why there is a Cyclops in Red Sonja, because of Ray Harryhausen. I'm sure we'll get onto that. But I wanted to be a vet. So I was a veterinary assistant all the way through my teenage years. I ran wildlife hospitals. I used to fly falcons. And then I was asked when I was 16, 17, I think, by Janet Street Porter to host all the animal items on a live Saturday morning children's show called Get Fresh, which is just kind of mayhem, one of those, you know, 2.5 hours of mayhem and chaos cartoons and pop bands and things. And every so often they would cut to me with a llama or an eagle or a tapir or whatever they had, and I would talk about it. And that's where I really thought my life was going to be. But during that time, I bought my own video camera, like a VHS one, and I started making short films. And people said to me, oh, you're making short films about animals. I went, no, I want to blow shit up. Right? Because that was my great passion. My great passion was science and nature. And I was a trained wildlife photographer. I was a wildlife photographer's assistant as well. So I knew how to film stuff, but I wanted to film sort of action-y type things because I'm a child of the 80s video boom. Your boys watched it on Betamax. My dad brought home VHS, right? And so it was that, love animals, love blowing shit up, secretly wanted to wear a dress, but that didn't come until a lot later on. And then that was my life. And I thought, okay, the TV presenting was, I was never very good at it. And I thought, I'll make short films. And I started making short films and they weren't very good. And then they got better. And then won a couple of awards. And then I wrote movies that nobody wanted. And then I wrote a movie that people wanted to buy called Death Watch, which is a horror movie set in the trenches of World War I. And lots of people wanted to buy the script and almost nobody wanted me to direct it. But I hung on. And finally, one company said, all right, shoot a scene from the movie, prove that you can do it. And I lived in Shropshire, where I grew up. So I asked a local farmer if I could rent a field for a weekend. And I got an earth mover and I dug trenches. I dug World War I trenches. And I went to my local army base and I borrowed ammo boxes and barbed wire and pallets. And I cast actors. And I actually cast a young James McAvoy, who was fresh out of drama school at the time, and a Craig Fairbrass and a bunch of other people. And I shot a scene, and then the company said, all right, you can go make the movie. And I made that movie with Andy Serkis and Jamie Bell and Matthew Rhys. And that was kind of the beginning of it. And it's taken me 20 plus years, really, to get back to making movies that also include the kind of environmental message that I care about. Because I was always interested in war and action and the kind of the consequence of sending men into conflict and what it does to them. Mm. So I was always interested in that.
Can I just say that you must have started your career about 10 years old, because I know our listeners can't see you, but you do look very young.
I'm really not, Annie. I'm really not. I'm a grandparent.
Yeah, me too. Right, now let's get on to the movie itself. Is it actually just a remake of the original Red Sonja, or have you tampered with it?
Oh, it's completely not a remake. It's a reboot entirely with the same character name, but it really bears no relationship at all to the 1985 movie with Bridget and Arnold. So this character has been, obviously, I don't know if the listeners know the history of the character, but she was created originally by Robert E. Howard, who created Conan the Barbarian, and also a character called Solomon Kane that I made a movie of 12 years ago with James Purefoy. Which you can come and see this weekend in Bristol, because we're doing a special screening of Solomon Kane and Red Sonja back to back. So I knew Sonja because of the short story that she appeared in, and she bears no relationship at all visually or even character wise to the 1973 Marvel character that Roy Thomas then created for the comics, which ran for basically 40 odd years. She's never really been out of print, but then, but the thing, what's interesting about Sonja is that even though she's incredibly familiar and iconic in the sense she's a buxom lady wearing very few clothes in a chainmail bikini with flaming red hair, chopping the heads off mostly snake monsters. So, do what you want with that metaphor. When I was chasing her after Solomon Kane, lots of people said to me, I guess you want to do Conan next. And I was obviously a fan of Conan, but it's like, I said, no, I want to do Sonja. And they didn't really understand. I hadn't come out as trans at that point, so they didn't really understand. Now, obviously, I'm living my life and I'm transgender, and they understand why I like this strong, iconic female character. But she's been in development as a movie character for like 17 years. People have been trying to reboot and remake and envision her, and it went through a bunch of different directors. Mm. I know Robert Rodriguez was going to do it, Rose McGowan. And Bryan Singer was going to do it, and Simon West, and a whole bunch of other people before. I mean, I think the studio's kind of run out of people to go to. And I finally was with them, and they said, oh, Red Sonja's looking for another director. And I went, just give it to me. I know what to do with her. I have a clear idea of who she is and what I think she should be. And by the way, lots of people will disagree with my interpretation of her, and that's fine, because that's always what you do when you sort of reboot or reinterpret a character. But for me, that's what she was. She's an incredible, strong woman, but also a woman full of compassion and loss and love, a fully rounded human being in this magic, fantastical world. Mm.
Can I just say the difference in the quality between watching the original Red Sonja and Conan the Barbarian on a Betamax tape to the 4K HDR that this new Red Sonja is in? The cinematography is stunning and the colour vibrancy is absolutely brilliant. So go give your eyes a feast.
Yes, I mean, my DPs worked brilliantly hard on it. Lorenzo Sanatori is an amazingly talented man. So credit to him. And just the look again, I wanted to make a movie which felt classic as well. It's not like modern and gimmicky. It's a classic piece of storytelling. So it traces a straight line from those 80s fantasy movies, which I loved. I can't, they're in my DNA, right? I grew up on them. I was obsessed with them and I love fantasy, but at the same time, she has to exist in the modern world. So it's a beautiful looking movie. It's got some great performances in it. It's pretty wonderful. And it's really practical filmmaking. I mean, you've seen the movie, right, Steffi?
I've only seen the preview, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. That's a shame, right? Well, there's a sequence in the movie which is in a burning forest and no CG. We burnt things down. You know, we built a forest, filled it full of gas pipes, turned the gas on, you know, started the pilot light and everything went up in flames. And we stood there for 3 nights. Doing sword fights, and also it's in rain, so this incredible beauty of the rain and the fire together. Practical filmmaking is what I wanted to do. It's what I love. I get incredibly bored very quickly in a kind of blue studio. There's a little bit of blue screen in here, and obviously there's a cyclops, and I couldn't get a real cyclops, so that's CG. But also it's a throwback to the Harryhausen kind of vibe of cyclopses, so I'm very proud of that. But yeah, I mean, it's a movie for a kind of big broad audience, really.
When did you start filming, MJ? Was it years ago?
You mean this movie?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, it's a couple of years now. It's a while. It took a while. We shot it, and then the post-production took a while, and there was some, you know, technical issues, and we had to stop and redo some visual effects and what have you. So it's been a little bit from when I shot it 2022, I think, 23. Yeah. And then these movies, it's always a year of post and anything. It's got loads of CG and then you've got to wait for a release schedule. So
yeah,
it's been a while. And I'm very glad to finally get it in front of the audience.
Now, I want to tap into the future, MJ.
Oh, God.
Is there anything you can share with us about what projects you're working on or you would love to do?
Well, there's a whole ruck of things that as a filmmaker, you want to, you know, have a shot at doing. I bounce between film and television, so I always enjoy going off and doing a few episodes of TV here and there. So I've just come off doing, you know, the Reacher show for Amazon. I do Reacher, but I've also just done a spin-off show called Neely, which is one of his other characters. You know, I've got NCIS coming out. If you're a fan of NCIS, I've just done that, which again a spin-off show for that. I went to Budapest and shot that. So there's loads and loads of fun stuff happening. And movie-wise, I'm not sure. I'd love to do a Sonya sequel. I have some stories in my head, and there's so many years of storytelling from the comics that you can tap into with Sonya. And I'd love to get Arnold Schwarzenegger involved as well at some point. You know,
wouldn't that be lush?
Yeah. Well, Arnold and I have kind of become friends, so I sent him this movie to watch, and he really, really liked it. So I said to him, "Would you be in the sequel, maybe?" I'm trying to persuade him to come and do that. But it's one of those things where, you know, you feel like to say it out loud is slightly to curse it, because movies are getting so difficult to get made, particularly in the budget space that I live in. I don't make big budget studio pictures. I make indies. And it's getting harder and harder to finance those as the kind of the world gets constricted. And, you know, I used to live in America, but I've come back to the UK now. And it's like figuring out what this industry is and what we can afford and the kind of stories that I want to tell. I'm obsessed with English folklore and mythology. So really, I'd want to do, you know, I want to dip into the Robin Hood stories and the King Arthur stories and the folklore.
Well, first of all, MJ, I really think you should make this a trilogy.
Okay.
Don't stop at a sequel. You keep going, girl.
If people will allow me to do it, I'll always do it.
Right. I think we've run completely out of time, MJ. Lovely to talk to you. I'd love to have you back on to talk about the rest of your story. That would be very interesting for our listeners. And do you say break a leg for filmmaking, or do you just say good luck? Which you obviously
I'll take whatever good fortune you can throw my way, darling.
MJ Bassett, thank you so much for joining us, even though such a short piece for Shoutout Radio.
Thank you, Steph.
Shoutout.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shoutout Podcast.
Calvin Harris and Clementine, and the song's called Blessings. You right there, Terry? What was that?
That was my Scottish voice saying Calvin Harris.
Yeah, don't ever do that again, Terry.
I'll leave the accents to Ez.
Good Lord. No, Terry. And Tara.
Oh, yeah.
And Tara, of course.
I mean, if Tara is listening, she's just going to turn terrible.
Driven off the road. Yeah. Into the
it would be a click of the off switch.
So you'll know if she's listening because you'll text her in a minute and she'll say, yes, that was rubbish, Tara.
Yeah. Or you better lock the door, she's on her way.
Now, I guess you two must remember Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Yes, indeed.
Of course.
Brilliant film. Have you seen the stage show as well? The stage show is really good. If you've not seen that, that's well worth seeing. I absolutely loved it. I remember seeing it, oh God, not long after I came out, when I was about 18, 19. It's, I think to this day, it's still one of Australia's biggest ever exports.
An unlikely export.
Yeah.
What a movie.
Yeah. But of course, unfortunately, the lovely Terence Stamp has passed away. I think, was it yesterday?
He's 87. Yeah.
Yeah, bless him. Which is a real shame, because I don't know if you know, but they were gearing up to do a Priscilla Queen of the Desert 2.
Yeah.
And he'd agreed to it. Yeah. So, such a shame we won't see that hit the screen.
Apparently, he was. The story goes that he received the script. He was very disillusioned with the film industry and thought, I don't need the money. Why should I act? And the script came through and he thought, I have to do this.
Yeah.
I will do this. And it got him back into filmmaking.
Yeah. It's a good... I think he was always up for a challenge, wasn't he? He took his craft very seriously. Mm. But I think this was a challenge and he thought, I've got to go for this one. You know, to play a trans person in Australia with the big Butch and Manly, you know.
I think he did it really well. You know, he was believable.
Yeah.
As a rounded now, these, trans woman.
These days, there would be a huge argument it should have been a trans person playing the part.
Was it
because of the... I mean, if you think back to... I think it was the 80s it came out?
1994.
90s, okay. 94. I mean...
I think if it was made nowadays, I think maybe it would be a trans person playing the part. But back then, I think they just chose an actor who they thought... Because to an actor, it's a part, isn't it, that they're playing. And... they're acting.
Yeah.
And if they're believable in that character, does it really matter that Terence Stamp did that part? I think he played it really well.
Yeah. Oh, I think, yeah, totally. Yeah. And it went a long way to help inequality, didn't it?
Mm.
That whole film. For not just for Australia, yeah, where it had a huge impact, but also the rest of the world.
Who was his sidekick? The one from Neighbours?
Guy Pearce,
yes. And
that was one of his first roles that took him to an international audience, and of course he's been global since those days.
And what a part he played in it.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he's gay.
No,
he isn't, but he played a can't be on gay man very
He played a better gay guy than you two do in reality.
But he's more gay than us. Yes, he managed that.
Yeah, I mean, you two could walk down the street and no one would know, but wow, Guy Pearce, come on. Yeah,
but that was the whole point of it, wasn't it?
Indeed. And Hugo Weaving, of course,
and
was the other
so many classic lines came out of it.
Yeah.
You know, like when the lady in the bar won't serve them a cocktail and says, no, we don't serve your kind. I don't think I can say it on the radio, can I?
So I think you can. I think you can.
Do you remember it?
Terence Stamp's character says, now listen to me.
You. Lower in the voice.
Why don't you just... light up a tampon and blow up your box, because that's the biggest bang you're ever going to get. Sweetheart. Yeah. And the entire theatre audience
just went, oh my God.
it was a wonderful,
I mean, for me, moment. The more shocking one, which we definitely can't describe too much on air, is when you meet the wife of
oh, the ping pong balls.
Yeah, with the ping pong balls. Yes. Yes.
We'll leave the ping pong balls there.
I remember, you remember in the film,
that's good,
their faces.
Good bum muscles, isn't it, to do that? You know, fire a ping pong ball out across from your bum, out across a pub.
I don't think it came from the bum.
Just say
let's not go there on it, shall we? Should we get some news headlines?
Well, before we do, just one thing also to mention on a serious note. The death has been reported of James Dobson, who was the founder and head of Focus on the Family. Now, those people that used to listen to Radio Luxembourg and some of the religious programmes they broadcast on Hire in the 70s will remember one of the most homophobic of the American right wing. So obviously no LGBTQ plus group will be sending any flowers. But that is the end of an era, as they say, in one way or another. Yeah. So that's,
there was a lot of that, wasn't there, with commercial stations like Luxembourg and also the pirate commercial
station.
To an
extent, yeah.
They'd rent out their airwaves overnight to religious Fruit Loops.
They would, because those Fruit Loops wouldn't get any audience any other way, because the BBC wouldn't touch them or anything. But yeah, they did come through in later. The DJs themselves hated it, by the way. They hated
it.
Well,
I think it...
It took it away from their programming, and a lot of the DJs were gay anyway, so...
And the big problem is, without that money, it probably wouldn't have carried on.
That's right,
So it's a real catch-22. You could hate them, but they were paying
the bills.
Wages,
Okay.
Well, we have community radio now.
We do, so. And it's a lot better.
And they haven't got to worry about paying us.
No, indeed. We do it for free.
But hello to all of you listening on the various stations we go out on. I would ask Steph to list them, but we need the news.
Yeah.
And that would take
on,
5
Terry.
Minutes.
Ready to crackle. This is Shout Out News. Welcome along. The gay human rights campaigner Peter Tatchell speaks this week to the new edition of the atheist magazine New Humanist, which has been published by the Rationalist Association since 1866. The New Humanist has a long history of backing LGBTQIA plus rights, but in his interview this time, Mr. Tatchell was discussing freedom of security, assembly and protest. He was highly critical of the Home Secretary for listing the action group Palestine Action as terrorist. He said that by casting the net widely into diffuse pressure and activist groups, the stage was set for clamping down on anyone and everyone who disagrees with government policy, and that is unhealthy for democracy. There was no justification for placing Palestine Action in the same bucket as Al-Qaeda or the IRA, he said. You can find copies of New Humanist magazine at radical and independent bookstores and at W.H. Smith's branches worldwide. Chicago's radical bookstore Women and Children First says that they are proud to be part of the Chicago Humanities Festival in early November. They will be co-organising at Francis W. Parker School an evening with the legendary feminist writer Margaret Atwood. She is currently promoting the book Book of Lives, a memoir of sorts, which details the extraordinary life she has led in the literary and activist worlds. As we travel with her along the course of her life, more and more is revealed about her writing, the connections between real life and art, and the workings of one of our greatest imaginations. Atwood is an intersectional feminist and has expressed her support for trans women in the movement, which has only increased the love and standing with which the wider audience holds her incredible intellect. For information on the event, search for the bookstore Women and Children First, Chicago, and whilst you're there, consider buying a few titles for the coming autumn evenings. The left-wing weekly paper Socialist Worker editorialises for Political Progressives this week, focusing its attention on anti-immigration protests. The paper said last weekend would-be Tory leader Robert Jenrick joined a protest organised by the openly fascist Homeland Party in Epping in Essex. This is a frightening escalation in support for open fascists from mainstream politicians. The decision to remove refugees from Epping's Bell Hotel will be praised as a victory by the far-right's mobs. But we shouldn't be paralysed by this realignment of the mainstream right towards the far-right. We need to mobilise wherever the far-right targets a hotel housing asylum seekers, and we will oppose Tommy Robinson as he tries to rampage through London on the 13th of September. The Elton John AIDS Foundation has positive words for all Southern-style Christian denominations this week. Sometimes characterised as homophobic and highly prejudiced, the foundation shares the story of Tonya, Konica, who, as one of her most challenging moments, found love, belonging and a life-saving sense of purpose at Vision Cathedral. Based in Atlanta, Georgia, Vision is radical and progressive within the Pentecostalist tradition. The church says of itself, "We are committed to transforming people to transform their world. We believe that the transformation of the community and the world begins with the transformation of our families and children. The Vision Cathedral of Atlanta is a place where dreams are made possible and where people are motivated to turn those dreams into a reality. It's a congregation that welcomes same-sex couples and families and preaches the love of Jesus of Nazareth without exception. Back to the story of Tonica, and we learned that the church and its community have become a beacon of hope. Surrounded by love and support, Tonica discovered her own strength, met her future wife, and built a joyful, loving family of her own. Today, she is paying forward the love she found there. As Chief Business Officer and Director of Health Programs at the Vision Community Foundation, she's a proud partner of the Elton John AIDS Foundation in Atlanta and helps lead the life-changing work to reduce HIV stigma amongst black, southern faith-based communities. Now, it's a wrap as South Asian Heritage Month comes to an end in the UK this week. The organisers say, guided by our shared heritage and powered by the unstoppable energy of our communities, South Asian Heritage Month 2025 has been a time of celebration, education and action. Conversations that mattered in the community are listed as mental health, organ donation, fertility, LGBTQ+, violence against women and girls, and racism. They said, "We got people talking and calling for change." Finally, they report that from 2026 onwards, South Asian Heritage Month will take place from the 1st to the 31st of July, saying, "We hope that the new dates will make planning easier for everyone, including our partners, and allow us to bring in new audiences and extend our scope. We will still have the same focus on commemorating and celebrating South Asian cultures, identities, histories and communities, but it will be spread over the whole of July." And finally, it's a bank holiday weekend in the UK coming up. An August bank holiday has, for the last 25 years, meant Manchester Pride. Over the holiday weekend, there will be a march and demonstration for LGBTQIA+ equality. There will be bands, performances, DJs and a major festival. The festival is brought forward in conjunction with the local LGBT+ radio station, Gaydio. But other local community broadcasters are also backing Pride, including Withenshaw FM and All FM. Headline acts on the Sunday include Gok One, Ollie Alexander and Nelly Furtado, plus dozens of others. Go to manchesterpride.com for details. On Bank Holiday Monday, the culmination of Manchester Pride beautifully closes with a moment of reflection in Sackville Gardens, marked by a sea of flickering candles. The organisers also say that although there are criticisms from part of the gay left on their corporate support, they nevertheless advocate for change, remarking, "From advocating for LGBTQ+ inclusivity and liberation in the workplace, to providing invaluable community connection and skill sharing through our vibrant community sessions, we feel we lead initiatives that touch every aspect of LGBTQ+ lives. Our mission extends far beyond just celebration. It's about effecting tangible, systemic change on a global scale." For more information, ticketing and full details, that address again is manchesterpride.com. And if you are taking part in the festivities, we wish you a safe and happy time. Keep in tune with LGBTQIA+ podcasts, radio services, print media and online blogs through the week for the latest. And do join us at shoutoutradio.lgbt for more of our content. For Shoutout News, this has been Terry Starr.
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
For more information about Shout Out Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Dear erudite listeners, now, if ever you're in a situation where you want to play
Bowie trumps. There's a man I know who's always, always going to trump you at every point. His name's Robin Pritchard, and there's no T in Pritchard, by the way. From TTL Productions, who are brilliant professional photography. Well, how did David Bowie start for you? Where did you first encounter the legend that was Mr. Bowie?
Like a lot of people my age, Martin, as a 10-year-old, I was sat in front of the Top of the Pops on a Thursday evening in July 1972, and my whole musical landscape changed. Bowie came on doing Starman with a bright blue guitar and a jumpsuit on. He put his arm around Ronno. And the next day in school, all anyone was talking about was, did you see Top of the Pops? Did you see David Bowie? And it changed me as, you know, I started taking more interest in what you would call proper music. My first album bought for my birthday the same year was Ziggy Stardust. Second one was Electric Warrior by T-Rex. So I was off to a really good start. And yeah, from that moment on, like lots of people who were born of a certain age, that was probably where we first saw and encountered and fell in love with the music of David Bowie.
And it's hard to explain to people who weren't around at that time just what that one Top of the Pops performance seeded in musical history, because there were young people like the Kemp brothers, a young Mark Almond, a young Boy George, who were watching that particular episode, who again had that similar experience. And of course, then you go one better. You don't just see him on television, you go and see him live. And what a gig to be at.
Yeah, I've got an older brother who is 8 years older than me, and he knew I was getting really excited about David Bowie. So after the debacle that was the Earl's Court performance on the 1973 tour, a couple of shows were added right at the end of the tour at the Hammersmith Odeon. So my brother Colin wrote off, like you did in those days, for some tickets, and without telling me, and then he told me, we're going to see David Bowie. And that happened to be the last show of the tour, which now legend tells us is when he put Ziggy Stardust to bed, when D.A. Pennebaker filmed it for posterity. And I was there. I was the envy of everybody at school. I was 11 years old and I'd gone to see David Bowie as my first concert.
And you say not only is that immortalised on film, it's been immortalised on vinyl. What was it like as a young kid? Was that your first ever gig?
That was my first ever gig. I truly cannot give you an accurate memory other than walking up to the Hammersmith Odeon, seeing crowds and crowds of people outside, and there was a large Winnebago style camper van outside, and you'll see it's at the beginning of the film, it's there in the introductions. I remember just being overwhelmed by hearing the music performed live, sudden costume changes, like at the end of Hang On To Yourself, and two girls appear and they pull at the suit that he's wearing, and suddenly he's dressed completely differently, and everything about it was flamboyant and colourful and exciting, brilliantly memorable, so wonderful to have been a small part of.
And the story doesn't really end there as well, because amongst your many myriad of talents, you are a professional photographer, and I've had the privilege of having my photo taken by you on a number of occasions, as have quite a few celebrities. But there was one person, of course, that I guess you always wanted to photograph.
Yeah, I was asked by a guy called David Curry, who ran a group or a fanzine called Starzone, could I photograph one of the Bowie concerts on the Glass Spider tour, because he was writing a book called Glass Idol. He procured a photo pass, and I went to Roker Park in Sunderland and got to be at the front of the stage, no more than a few feet from Bowie, to shoot the first three numbers. And I took hundreds of pictures within those first three numbers, and they ended up on the front cover of his book and the back cover, and lots of pictures inside. And it was just wonderful. I'd been to the show at Wembley Stadium a few days before, so I knew how the concert began. I knew he was lowered down in a chair from up in the lighting rig, so I was ready for everything. And it was wonderful. I never got to meet David Bowie, but that was as close as I got to him, sort of within 6 feet of him.
Well, to be a professional photographer, David Bowie's photographer, that's not really a bad place to be. Put you in league with people like
Mick Rock, Dennis O'Regan, people like that. They were all people who'd worked with Bowie. Robert Ellis, a really great rock photographer whose work I admire.
You are a photographer. As I say, you've done quite a few other celebrities. You can name drop as much as you like here now. I mean, they're not going to be as good as David Bowie.
I've been on tour with Genesis. I've photographed Whitney Houston, Peter Gabriel, Phil Collins. Away from the world of music, I've photographed Christopher Lee, the actor. I've photographed any number of luminaries from TV shows like Doctor Who and Supernatural and Blake Seven. So yeah, a lot of very well-known people who are household names.
And I think watching you in action, one of the great things about seeing Robin in action, the very fact that you just put people at ease with no effort, it seems, and that obviously makes for a great photograph.
Oh, well, that's kind of you to say. And yeah, if that's your perception of how I'm working, then I'm clearly doing something right. And because at the end of the day, that in that small time that the person has come next to the celebrity and they're getting their photo taken, I want it to be something they'll treasure afterwards. A lot of times they're very nervous, but so long as that photo looks good, and lots of people tell me that they do, then I'm doing something right.
Absolutely. And we're just about to go and take some photographs in about 10 minutes or so with some more Doctor Who stars. So I better say thank you very much for your time, Robin. If people do need to contact you and use you professionally, how do they get in touch?
They can find me on Twitter, and the handle is @RobinTTL. And you can find me there and send me a message.
Robin, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much. We better go and take some photos.
Thanks, Martin. Have a good day, everyone.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Sam Feld and Crying on the Dance Floor. Remix of a 90s track, I think, that one. Yeah, so.
Yes.
Sorry, didn't turn you on. No, it wasn't Alice DJ. I just looked it up and told you, didn't I?
I thought it was. You said it was Alice DJ. Oh, my brain. It's like Swiss cheese.
No, Alex something, didn't I? I just had it up on the screen a minute ago. Well, give me 2 seconds, I will find it for you. Okay, talk amongst yourselves for a minute.
La, 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 la. La, la,
it's
la,
been
la.
A good programme. I've enjoyed it tonight.
Have you, Terry?
I have.
I'm glad you came.
So am I.
It was worth the while.
It's just us three. We happy three tonight.
Yes.
Are you happy?
Yes, I am.
Good. That's so nice.
It's good.
Okay.
It's good.
You found it yet? Come on, we're struggling.
It's called Do You Think You're Better Off Alone?
Do you think you're better off alone?
And that was
off
done
off.
By Alice DJ.
There you are.
Yeah. Great
Alice
track.
DJ.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think...
Came out in 2000.
Do you think with movies and music, they're regurgitating a little bit too much from the past?
Mm.
Well, when it's Star Trek, I'm not going to complain because I'm enjoying Strange New Worlds.
Oh, I'm loving it. God, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I love Discovery.
But then I suppose that's not really a hash because, you know...
No, it's Pike. We never saw Pike.
No.
Well, we did for the very first episode.
Yeah.
Didn't end well for him, did it?
No. And they carried that story up through, haven't they? They've,
yes.
He knows he's
going
to die horribly, but doesn't know how.
Yeah, but he could change the future.
True,
by
yes.
doing different things, so yes. it's not necessarily yeah. true. But it's good that they've introduced Kirk now.
Yeah. If you're not a Star Trek fan, sorry.
Tough.
Yeah.
If you're not a Trekkie, you're not LGBTQ. So,
so it, does exit big, left. It does have a big LGBTQ does, following. Yeah. Yes.
So yeah. you shouldn't be listening so, to this show.
I'm sorry, Voyager is still my favourite personally.
Voyager was great, especially yeah. 7 of 9. She was outrageous.
It was, well, yes. I mean, there was a lot of moments in it, wasn't there? I mean, the Doctor was fairly camp himself.
He's great fun. Robert Picard.
Yeah, in real life, he's a lovely, lovely guy.
You met him, haven't you?
I haven't met him, but one of my friends runs the SF Ball here in the UK, and they've had him as a guest many times and said what a pleasure he is.
Yeah.
So.
And Kate Mulgrew as well.
Kate Mulgrew's been there, yes. Mm. Yes, she's apparently quite a pleasure.
Yeah, she's nice woman, yeah.
Fingers crossed she'll come back as like Admiral Janeway or something. That's what I'm hoping for. I just want to know, I would love a Star Trek that follows on from where Voyager finished. and what happened.
Yeah. They'll get round to it. Yeah.
I just want them to continue after Strange New Worlds and get on with Kirk taking over the Enterprise and redoing all those stories that we had, but in 4K HDR.
Yeah, as opposed to with sets made out of foam that wobble when you touch them.
Yeah. Well, it was the same with Doctor Who, wasn't it? Whenever he closed the door in the TARDIS, the whole thing wobbled.
I think he's exaggerated on both programmes. It wasn't that cheap.
Come on. You must remember Prisoner Cell Block H. I mean, that they closed the door and the whole wall would wobble because it was actually. I'm not on about the modern remake. I'm on about the original.
Well, I've seen that on EastEnders. When somebody's had a row and they slam the door and the whole wall. Could have reinforced that a little bit better, guys. Obviously not a gay guy on the maintenance, because he'd have done a proper job.
Oh, you got to laugh. But yeah. No, I mean, it's like, yeah. I mean, there's Jurassic World being done to death. Yeah, you said that the latest one.
It's all right, it's entertaining.
I enjoyed it.
I mean, because the first one was really good, but it literally was like a giant version of Jurassic Park. It was all about, you know, they're making a whole park, wasn't it? And then the second one was identical to the first second one, if you know what I mean.
Well, we took Terry and he sat there. We gave him an ice cream and a bucket of popcorn and he was quiet all the way through.
So, are you sure he didn't fall asleep?
Ez did. He didn't.
Someone else fell asleep. I didn't.
I thought it was the surround sound, but it was Ez snoring. I thought it was a dinosaur in my ear.
I don't normally do very well with thrillers or horrors, Tom took me to see 28 Years Later.
All right.
It's quite grisly in places.
I've seen,
but it's very good. It's very enjoyable.
I've seen 28 Days Later and 28 Weeks Later. Yeah. And I didn't realise 28 Days Later originally finishes at a certain point. And when they took it to the studio said, you can't finish it there. Why have you finished it there? They said, we've run out of money. So the studio gave them more money to have the little bit of ending that you see. And you can actually kind of tell that it's different cameras and the like when it flips to the new stuff.
So it's like a low budget indie film to start with, then, I guess.
Yeah, they pushed the budget to the max with it.
Yeah.
So, but it became a huge success, didn't it, 28 Days Later?
Yeah.
So we got Halloween yet to come. Is it too early to talk about Halloween yet?
We're still
in some holiday.
But I have seen shops with Halloween merchandise in them. I've seen shops
I thought it was all back to school at the moment.
It was back to school, then Halloween, then Christmas stuff. You know, it happens soon.
You said the C word.
I did.
In August.
I went there in August.
Anyway, that's it for this week. As we said many times before, we are looking for volunteers. So if you do want to get involved with radio, whether it's on air or off air, we would absolutely love to hear from you. Please do get in touch.
If you are interested in LGBTQ+ community radio, go to shoutoutradio.lgbt and get in touch and get involved with the show.
Next week, we're celebrating the lovely Victoria Wood. From myself, from Terry, and from Steph, say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Shout out. LGBT radio for you.